And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this, hey, the regular season's over, what do we talk about edition with Luke Buer, myself, and my favorite second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. But before we get into some topics here with signing day just a week away, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, so technically, the Golden Club doesn't sponsor this episode per our contractual agreements, but you know, we're actually going to do a live event for them. So we figured we might as well plug it because it's kind of a cool live event. So this live event is going to be for the signing day social. It's going to be only for GLC members. So if you aren't a member of the GLC, I encourage you to go to goalineclub.org, sign up for this event. Space is limited, so make sure you sign up quickly because it is going to sell out. I'm almost certain of that. This will be at 5:30. I think it's in the M Club room, if I'm not mistaken, at TCF Bank Stadium. If you do sign up for this event, you're obviously a Goal Line Club member. You will be able to reserve a seat for the signing day social, so don't have to worry about getting there late or anything like that. So pretty cool event. Ryan and I will record a podcast. We may have a number of guests. We're not entirely sure how that's all going to shake out, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be a really fun event. So make sure that you sign up and be a part of that with us. It will be very, very fun. All right.
Yeah. I even bought a suit for this thing. That's how high profile this thing's going to be.
You literally shocked me. Like, there isn't a chance I'm going to wear a suit. Like, not a chance. I don't even go to...
I got to look good for the people.
Oh,
man. People got to put a face to a name. And first of all, they're going to look at my face and think, yeah, he really does have a face for radio. But if damn it, he doesn't look dapper out there on that stage.
This might be the very first time I ever see you in something not 247 branded.
I've come over to your house before, and it hasn't been 247 branded.
Yeah, that's fair.
I've had wine with you and your wife.
That's fair. We broke bread.
We've had wine.
Yeah, that's true.
But for this event anyway, we don't know what the coaches or which coaches we're going to get yet, / which ones I'm going to get, and Luke's going to have fun with enunciations. But it does sound like we're going to have some coaches up there, and this is going to be a 201 level course on Gopher recruiting. But all the guys that sign, I'll try to get them to get into the stories, just more information about it from them and how they perceive the recruitments, why they were so interested in them, and things of that nature. And I think it's going to be a pretty cool event. It'll lead right up to the signing day social. There's a cash bar in the back if you want to start getting ready for that signing day social event and heckle things at Luke. You're more than welcome to do so.
Yeah, that's totally valid and fair. You can absolutely heckle me. I totally deserve it. All right, let's chat a little bit about now. This season is over. The 2019 regular season is done. We're into the bowl game. I think I've talked numerous times about how I consider that kind of the star on the season, but it's not, or the asterisk on the season. It's not necessarily a part of the season, even though it is. But you know, it will be very interesting to watch the Gophers play Auburn. But let's look back at this 2019 season to start. I'm curious to get some feedback from you guys. Obviously, we've talked about the microcosm that it has been 10 wins. We talked about not being able to win the Big Ten West when the opportunity was there, and get to a Rose Bowl, etc. But there are a lot of improvements this season, etc. So I want to start there. There are a lot of guys that improved this season and made major contributions. So maybe from each of you, who was that number one most improved player in your mind? And maybe Derek, we'll start with you.
You know, if I think about, I always try and relate back to the X's and O's. That's kind of what I focus on. And I think that it may sound like cheating a little bit, but I think Rashad Bateman's, although he played quite a bit last year, he was a good talent last year, the things he was able to do on offense and really the way that he was able to force defenses to defend the Gophers offense was, I think, the single biggest change from this year from last year to this year. So I would probably have to give it to him. And we talked about it quite a bit during the season, but just a couple of things to speak back to. The way the Gophers used him in formations, many times splitting him out alone, opposite a trips or a twins formation, forced the safety to play on his side, took another defender out of the box, which at times opened up the running game for the Gophers. Other times, if they left him in single coverage, they were obviously able to target that part of the field. It just defenses, you know, throughout the season had trouble defending him, and obviously in a one-on-one situation, even more so. So I think schematically what that was able to do and the way it kind of had a ripple effect on the rest of the offense was, I think, a big game changer. And although he, again, was good last year, I think that he really developed out his game and took a huge stride forward. So that'd be who my vote would go to, is Rashad.
I'm shocked you wouldn't go with Tanner, because that's absolutely my vote, at least for the offensive side of the ball. Just the way he was able to elevate a Minnesota offense and the way he was able to get a passing offense legitimized at the University of Minnesota. I mean, we're talking about a kid who went in the final six games of the season, he gets six starts, nine touchdowns, six interceptions, completes less than 60% of his passes. So now we have a full 12-game sample size. He ends up completing 66% of his passes for over 10 yards per completion, 28 touchdowns to those six interceptions. We're talking about on the road this season, Tanner completes nearly 70% of his passes, a very nice 69%, with 13 touchdowns and one interception on the road. Against top 25 teams in the top AP top 25, 67% completion percentage, six touchdowns, one interception. Like, this guy, he surpassed any and all expectations I had for him. If you've been listening to this podcast, if you've been an avid reader of Gopher Illustrated, you knew that there was going to be a legitimate quarterback battle in fall camp. And I didn't pick Zach Anikstead to be the guy that won that. I can tell you multiple members of the Gopher coaching staff thought that Tanner Morgan wasn't going to be the starter when he emerged. But Zach gets hurt, Tanner gets elevated, and now here we are with a quarterback who is second team all Big Ten. I think you could make a case that Tanner this season in the Big Ten was the best passing quarterback, whereas Justin Fields was the best dual threat. But for what Tanner did for this offense and getting the ball to Rashad Bateman and getting the ball to Tyler Johnson, allowing Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, Mo Ibrahim to do things, I mean, the way he was just able to elevate an offense, it is far and beyond any expectations I had for him coming into the season. That's how you end up second team all Big Ten. But Luke, are you going to go with one of the Burns brothers here, or are you going to go off on your own here?
Oh, I'm totally going off on my own. You know, I probably would have leaned Tanner, but the more I thought about this, the whole season, the whole time going into the season, we talked about how this offensive line was going to be a force, right? And that obviously wasn't the case, especially in the non-conference season. But we kept saying, like, okay, there are four certainties and there is one big giant question mark, right? And that giant question mark was left tackle. And without question, I think we were all surprised that it ended up being Sam Schluter. But if there's anybody that improved or changed their best this season, it has to be Sam Schluter to me. He solidified, and oftentimes, I know Derek talked about, he was maybe the most consistent offensive lineman on this in this group, who in this whole, in the entire group improved throughout the season as it went. And so to me, maybe this is, I'm giving this to Sam just because, you know, he was the biggest surprise to me on the offense, in terms of a performance. Yeah, did he have some down games? Absolutely. But he wasn't the liability that maybe we expected out of the left tackle, no matter who it was going to be, right? So I was really impressed with what he was able to do and how he was able to overcome, you know, basically losing his job the year before to Daniel Fa'alele, you know, a true freshman at the time, coming back, making a switch on the side of the lines, and then being able to be very, very effective. I think, Ryan, he was Big Ten honorable mention as well, right?
He was, along with essentially every other member of the offensive line, true, with Blaze Andrews getting 13. Now, we all picked offensive players. I didn't expect us to all pick offensive players. So if you guys had to pick a guy on the defensive side of the ball,
Jordan
Howden. All right, Luke, take it away.
Jordan Howden. Why? I mean, absolutely. I think I've said this multiple times throughout the season in the podcast. He was without question a liability. His freshman campaign really struggled to tackle in open space. I'm not saying that he was perfect, but there were big question marks at safety outside of Antoine Winfield Jr. And Antoine Winfield Jr. was great, but he improved immensely, especially in open field tackling. Obviously made a big statement play to end out the Penn State game. But to me, like, that was a position again where we had big question marks outside of Winfield Jr., really the whole secondary as a whole, right? And that group, and I think maybe a lot of this has to do with the coaching changes that were made there, splitting up the corners and safeties. Maybe that was beneficial to a guy like Jordan, but to me, he was the most improved defensively.
Derek, how about you?
You know, I would probably have to go with Antoine Winfield, only because, yes, we did expect him to be a good player. That wasn't really much of a surprise, as Luke's alluded to in his picks. But, you know, I'm a big proponent of Bud Grant's famous saying that the key to greatness is durability. And he was a guy that's battled injuries. And I think that we've got to see this season through his staying healthy, what the impact that he could have. So again, not that he didn't have the talent before, but the fact that he was able to stay healthy, spend another year in this defense, you know, because I think he just looked so comfortable, and they set things up really well for him to make a huge impact, be it interceptions, you know, facing a run first team. They were able to bring him into the box to be an extra run defender. So I would say that again, with the caveat that we're talking about, you know, staying healthy and being able to perform and produce more, I would say that would be my most improved from year over year.
It's wild. I didn't think we were going to be 3 for 3 on both sides of the ball, all different players. It's interesting to me. I would go with Sam Renner. If you were to told me at any point that Sam Renner would have 7 tackles for loss, 4 sacks, 4 passes batted down, and have 40 tackles, he was as disruptive of a 3 technique as Minnesota's had in PJ Fleck's tenure. Now, that's not saying a whole heck of a lot with some of the players that Minnesota's had there, but the way he has improved from 2018, essentially his previous 4 years of not really doing a whole heck of a lot, to as a fifth-year senior, Minnesota needed a guy to step up, and I thought Sam Renner was incredibly disruptive. Those 7 tackles for loss are second on the team, and you get 4 sacks along with it. I also think you could absolutely go with Kamal Martin. If you were to told me Kamal Martin had the season that he had, now I wish he would have been able to stay a little bit more healthy and different things of that nature, but the way he was able to really figure it out and really play well when he was healthy was something that this Gopher defense needed. I mean, we talked about on this podcast for weeks about how Kamal Martin was the most valuable player on this defense. And that's over Antoine Winfield. And I still think I would stand by that take for what Kamal provided in the front 7 to allow Antoine Winfield to do what he did. And again, it's not fair that you guys got 1 and I get 3, but I'm going to sneak in a 3rd. If you were to have told me Benjamin St. Juste led the team and passes batted down with 9, this is a guy who wasn't even here to start fall camp. He wasn't even practicing to start fall camp. He gets 3 weeks of practice before the first game, and then he ends up starting, I think, the final 7, and he ends up really becoming a huge contributor. You go from playing on special teams at Michigan in 2017, missing the entire 2018 season. You essentially haven't played defense at the collegiate level in your entire life. And you come out and you end up having 9 passes batted down and really playing pretty good coverage throughout the entire season. Between the 3 of them, I don't think you can go wrong. But I think it speaks to the culmination of why did Minnesota win 10 games? Well, it had so many different guys improve. That's why we have so many different answers, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan, I want to give you an opportunity now to state your special teams player of the year. I know you've been waiting for this a long time. Or wait, maybe probably shouldn't do that. No, I was
Who would you even pick? Like, would it be Herbers? Even though Herbers ends, I believe he ends the year like 2nd to last in net punt.
How about this? How about a guy that only played in 4 games? Maybe a DJ Gordon.
Actually, you know who I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with the long snapper. Brady Weeks.
Weeks, yeah.
I don't think we talked about Brady Weeks one single time as a true freshman long snapper. And if you're not talking about the long snapper is absolutely doing his job. And for a true freshman to come in and essentially give 95-98% of the time were good snaps, good for you, Brady Weeks. Good for you.
Okay, joke's over. So I'm going to take a authoritarian position here, and we'll skip the traditional offensive MVP, defensive MVP, because quite frankly, I mean, that's probably been talked ad nauseum on major sports radio, etc. You maybe even did an article on Gopher Illustrated. Shocker, I probably didn't read it. Sorry, Ryan. My bad.
At least you're honest about it, you know?
But I will say this. Give me a name, both of you guys, that you have high expectations going into next year. Can't be someone you've already mentioned, but give me a name of someone that you're expecting a lot from, maybe to take that next jump, or maybe be that most improved next year. Or maybe, Ryan, you can speak to a redshirt freshman that people haven't seen, right? Or maybe had limited playing time. So maybe Ryan will make you go first, because you know this is your full-time job.
Yeah. Oh, a guy that I expect to make a jump. I'll say this. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Chris Ottman-Bell seamlessly fills in for what Tyler Johnson provided. Now, I'm not expecting him to be Tyler Johnson, who finishes the regular season with 75 receptions, 1,113 yards and 11 scores. But if you were to tell me that Chris Ottman-Bell catches 50, 55 balls for 800, 900, maybe 1,000 yards and close to double-digit touchdowns, I would absolutely believe it, because I really think that in the limited opportunities that he got, that he was able to show in a multitude of different ways, whether it was on tunnel screens, whether it was on a slant, whether it was on some kind of contested catch along the sideline, whether it was the Fresno State catch to allow Minnesota to win the game, when Chris Ottman-Bell got opportunities, he made the most of them. Now Tyler Johnson graduates. Rashad Bateman needs somebody to take the coverage off him. And with everybody rotating coverage to Rashad Bateman next year, I really think Chris Ottman-Bell is going to have a sensational junior season. Now, for those younger guys that I could be expecting to make a jump, Mo Ibrahim's going to need somebody to help him. And my number one guy to help Mo Ibrahim next year is going to be Cam Wiley. I really think that what I saw in limited game action for him is a guy that, as he continues to lower his pad level, being a taller running back, that he has the vision and the skill set and the speed to really be an impact player. I think that you shouldn't be sleeping on Jason Williamson. I think that he was a guy that was a four-star for a reason. I think he, in spring, from what I saw, he was going to be making waves potentially this past fall before that knee injury occurred. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him really start to compete for things come spring and fall. I also wouldn't be surprised if Trey Potts moves to slot receiver. Now, that may be a new thing that some may not have heard, but we saw Trey Potts play running back this past year. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Minnesota try to transition him to the slot to see if he can't give Minnesota a different look there as they try to figure out what to do with Demetrius Douglas. And then what is it going to be for Minnesota's defensive line? Because you lose a lot. We're talking Sam Renner, Carter Coughlin, Winston DeLattie-Boudere, amongst others. And so can Boye Mafe make a jump? I know that the staff is incredibly high on D'Angelo Carter. I know that they really like what they've seen from Rashad Chaney. They think that Logan Richter can be a solid nose technique, a one technique that can back up Jamal Teague. It can potentially be a guy that when Micah Treadway graduates or leaves the program after the 2020 season, that he could be ready to step in. But they're really going to need a young guy to really fill in at that rush end spot with Boye. Is DV Harris ready? That's going to be the question, one that we're going to monitor in spring ball. Now, I also wouldn't be shocked, Luke, if DJ Gordon or Donald Willis are guys that are starting at linebacker. I think those two are dudes. I think those two are really trying to learn this offense as quickly as they can, because they know with Kamal and Thomas gone, and I don't think that Mariano and Thomas Rush and Braylon Oliver have showed that they are ready to be full-time guys yet. And that's where I think Gordon and Willis could potentially go in. So, Derek, who is someone for you that you think could make a jump next year?
I think if I could go with one on offense, one on defense. Offensive side, I would take a hard look at Daniel Faalele. The reason I say that is, I've talked about it before, but I believe the progression of an offensive lineman goes from knowing who you're blocking, your assignments. The second part is technique, how you're getting the block done, and the third part is effort. And he looks to me like a guy, obviously it's been talked about ad nauseum, the physical properties and talents that he has. He hasn't played football very long, and what I see is a guy that is still learning the game. I don't think he's touched that third phase yet. Some of the goal line situations where it's very straight ahead, it's very, you know, he knows what he's doing, he's confident. I mean, he can be a bulldozer, but when you're still doing a lot of reading, a lot of play, you know, calling your blocking assignments, he has the physical tools, but he can look tentative at times. So I would look to, you know, for him to make a jump, you know, in his game, just again, another year of experience when he hits that third level, and he can take full use of his physical capabilities. Obviously that the sky is the limit. So, I would look there on the defensive side. One guy that you mentioned that I think, they've started well with and has high potential is Braylon Oliver. I think he's a guy that again, physically has the tools to be something of a Blake Cashman. And we talked about it this year. It was a guy that maybe, hadn't had the experience and the comfort with doing a lot of, play diagnosing, a lot of reading and reacting. So they put him in situations where he's blitzing. He's able to just use his speed, not have to do a lot of reading. And I think, again, as his game comes along and he gets more comfortable with that, that role can expand a bit. And so, again, a guy that's physically, you know, has the speed, has a good closing speed, you know, similar to a Blake Cashman, is if they can put him in more and more positions to succeed, I think he's a guy that could get more playing time, you know, and make a jump.
All right, let's maybe transition this conversation outside of like awards, etc., that we might talk about. But I'm curious, Derek, to get your impression. So obviously the offense made some big strides in terms of scoring points, being effective. I mean, taking you know, the top two wide receivers, statistically speaking, in the Big Ten is quite a feat in its own, right? But, you know, maybe schematically, what can we maybe expect going into the 2020 season? Or what's some things that we could see out of this offense and out of this defense that they can build upon the success they've had this year?
I think one of the things that's unique is Ryan touched on it with his most improved on offense being Cannon Morgan. That's a huge, I don't know, you know, as a Gopher fan, I don't know that we've been in a position where we have the returning experience and talent at quarterback going into the 2020 season. I don't know that we've had that level in maybe decades.
Considering, I think Tanner just had the single season. For my money, Tanner Morgan just had the best quarterbacking play at the University of Minnesota in my lifetime, and probably many of the people listening to this in their lifetime. We have never had this kind of level returning in a very long time.
And I think that's key for any offense, to have that talent and experience at quarterback for obvious reasons. But the fact that he's able to come in, where they're able to come in with that type of talent and experience. And again, just a quick mention for durability, the fact that he was able to last the season, something that many of us didn't think was possible, just given the history of this program and having to play two different quarterbacks. I think that's huge. I've always said, because people they're used to watching the NFL, they're used to watching the elite quarterback play at the highest level, that becomes right or wrong, that becomes kind of a standard. And then when people go to watch college football, fans, I always say probably 60-75% of fan bases want better play out of their quarterback. If you take, you know, the teams in the Big Ten, I'll bet if you took a poll, eight of those fan bases, if not more, would say, yeah, we could do better at quarterback. And we're, for the first time, as you mentioned, Ryan, in a long, long time, you know, decades, maybe ever, we're in a position where we're saying it's, you know, we're great. We're at the quarterback position. We're good. You know, so that's a huge, you know, amount to build on. coming into the season. And
let me just jump
schematically.
Let me jump in here. And the other thing to note, like on top of, you know, Tanner coming back, is the, just think about 2018. You had a redshirt freshman and a true freshman, and the true freshman winning out, right? We for once actually have some depth behind Tanner as well. Now, not saying that we want to have to go to that, but you've got a guy in Zach Yannickstead that's going to return as a redshirt sophomore. You're going to have Jacob Clark. You're going to have Cole Kramer, etc., you know, to back them up. I don't know, Ryan, do they have a quarterback coming in 2020? All that said, you know, there is actually some depth, whereas when PJ kind of first came in, there was a whole kerfuffle that was the Connor Rota and Demery Croft. That wasn't a great situation. Then the next year wasn't any better because they didn't even have a guy that had taken a snap. So just to add on to that, quarterbacking is a much, much better position than it's ever been in a long time.
You have four quarterbacks returning. I mean, Tanner returns. I would anticipate Zach Anikstead returning. And then you have redshirt years off Cole Kramer and Jacob Clark. You have, in my mind, the most quarterback depth you've had in a long time. Minnesota's not going to sign a 2020 quarterback because they have Ethan Calliope-Manis as their 2021 guy, potentially Sam Jackson as well, both four stars. So that's how you get a four star, is you sell them, hey, we're not going to take a 2020 quarterback because we value you so much, so please value us back. But to Derek's point, this is the best I have felt about quarterback going into a season, even though that season is now 9 months away. In Derek, I don't even know, probably my entire lifetime. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's new territory. It's something that when you guys are evaluating the other Big Ten opponents coming into the season, that's one thing people always look for is when you're looking at the schedule the next year, and you say, what do they have coming back at quarterback? Do they have a new quarterback? And that's instantly a red flag, you know, a sign of vulnerability. So yeah, we're in new territory. And as far as that, so that's something to build on. And I think a couple things maybe to look for next year. I thought that this year, the addition of that outside zone running play was a huge game changer beyond the other things we talked about, the success they had on offense. So I would look for the offense to add in another couple wrinkles in the running game. I can't tell you exactly what those things would be. I mean, we've seen things like jet pass, a jet sweep, maybe a counter, something like that. But I would expect that they'd add another layer in the running game. And then I'll continue to say, I said it this year, and to be honest, I was wrong. We didn't see it through the end of the regular season. I think there's a lot they could add in the play action game that they're just not going to. I'm not talking about RPO. I'm just straight up play action, whether that involves a tight end or slot receiver or running back. I mean, there's lots of different things, and they just haven't, I just think they're just scratching the surface on the play action game, that I think as teams continue to try and take away things like the RPO slant, the inside zone, maybe outside zone, it's just really going to open things up for play action. So I think that's something to look forward to next year from the offense.
I just hope that Shiraka, because what game was it that they had the Jake Paulson egregious drop where they went play action? It was either Illinois or Nebraska.
I think it was Nebraska.
Nebraska.
And it was, and the best part about it is Derek called that at halftime. He texted me saying, hey, the tight end is going to be wide open if they go play action. What does Shiraka do in the third quarter? Because he and Derek text and talk more than people know. He goes with the play action to the tight end. No one's within 55 yards of him. I mean, if we're going to be honest, no one was within a planet of him. And he drops it. And then the tight end just never ceases to exist again. So now you have Brevin Spanford, Coe Keefe, and Jake Paulson coming back, plus you're losing Tyler Johnson. And that third receiver slot is going to be an unknown for now. Maybe it is Demetrius Douglas. Maybe it is a transfer elsewhere that, if we're going to continue to talk about him, has to put his name into the transfer portal at least soon, if he's going to graduate and transfer. But if you're trying to find another option, if you have 1A and 1B and Rashad Bateman and Chris Ottman-Bell, plus you're losing two running backs who this year combined for, I think, around 300 carries, might want to use the tight end a little bit more next year.
Yeah, that is something interesting that, you know, they didn't utilize the tight end. They got to get that piece of the Shiraka pie, as we learned this summer. But okay, in terms of segueing, you know, outside of this, anything else you guys want to talk about, you know, going from this 2019 or yeah, from this 2019 season before we maybe transition and look forward even a little bit more?
I just think that expectations were risen this year, or they were raised. You know, my mind at this stage of the game isn't really good with the amount of time that recruiting takes and succumbs over my brain. But I think that expectations were raised this year, and I think rightfully so. And we thought, you know, Luke and I coming into the season, I think I predicted a 9-3, and Luke, were you at 8-4?
8-4.
So 10-2 surpasses both of our expectations. And the tough part about it is you could say they're two losses. I would absolutely say they should have won against Iowa. I think that Tyler Johnson drop was massive. I think Minnesota catches that. They convert the fourth down, probably score a touchdown, and it's 17-all with Minnesota having all the momentum. Now, I know PJ Fleck doesn't believe in that, but Iowa's offense was absolutely dreadful at that point. Minnesota's offense had been moving it consistently throughout the entire game. And then we would be talking about an 11-1 team at worst that would have been going to Indianapolis, that would have been going to the Rose Bowl. Now, when you look forward to the 2020 schedule, and it to me, it's not a whole lot different. We can get into that maybe a little bit later, but you shouldn't be expecting 10 wins every season. I wish we were at that level. I don't think I'll be predicting 10 wins when I am able to watch an entire spring game slate or a spring practice slate and a fall practice slate. Maybe I do, maybe I don't, but I think that they certainly have some holes to fill on offense, certainly at the running back position, wide receiver three. They have their entire offensive line coming back, which is obviously a huge benefit. But it's the defensive side of the ball where we're finally going to see in year four under PJ Fleck, how well have they recruited defensively? Because Antoine we don't know for sure yet if Antoine Winfield Jr. is leaving.
You got to presume he goes, though.
I would assume he's gone. I know Carter Coughlin's gone. I know Sam Renner's gone. I know Winston Delighted-Boudere's gone. I know that Thomas Barber's gone. Jamal Martin. I mean, we're talking about a lot of guys that have played a lot of meaningful football for Minnesota's defense and have been a big part of why the Gophers have been successful. So how does Minnesota fill those slots now that it's year four is going to be the huge takeaway for me and arguably the biggest thing I'm going to be watching for this upcoming spring and upcoming fall. Derek, how about for you?
Yeah, I think you touched on something that I wanted to expand upon a little bit. We focused a lot on the individual players, but one area I think that I'd like to see change a bit next year is the game planning against. I'm a big believer in matchups, and I think where the Gophers did not fare as well this year is against who I would consider what I call game script opponents. You know, these teams that like to win football games with a game script, and I think that Iowa, Northwestern, Wisconsin, you could maybe even say Georgia Southern because they're an option team, might fall into that category, maybe South Dakota State. These teams that like to, you know, the baseball analogy would be a small ball team, or the basketball analogy is maybe like a Princeton offense team, just this different way of you know, winning and getting a game script in their favor makes it difficult. And I just don't think that the Gophers had a great approach this year. And those were some of the games that they struggled the most in. And so we talked about it quite a bit after the Wisconsin games. We probably don't need to elaborate a ton, but that's something I would like to see change, just a little bit more aggressiveness. And you know, I believe that you don't try to out game script a game script team. You got to go in and you play your game, your offense, which in 2019, and I would expect in 2020, is going to be a high powered, high scoring offense based on explosive plays. So I'd like to, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I think this coaching staff does do good self scouting. They are good chess players. Kirk Soraka, excellent chess player on offense. And I think they do take those things seriously and they'll reflect on that. And so I look forward to, you know, seeing a little different approach next year. And I think that would help them a lot.
That's a great point. It really is. And Iowa and Wisconsin next year are going to be very, very interesting games early in the season. You get Iowa the third game of the season next year. Yeah, we're talking about September 19th, Minnesota gets Iowa at home. And I can assure you, you already are going to be mad at the Gopher offense because they face Florida Atlantic, which used to be coached by Lane Kiffin, who's now at Ole Miss, and I believe Willie Taggart. Is it Willie Taggart that's still there?
Yeah, he just took that job today, I think.
So you have Florida Atlantic in year one. You should be able to beat them at home. You get something called Tennessee Tech, which is Luke's favorite school in Tennessee.
Yeah, so Minnesota's offense they and defense
are going to be incredibly vanilla, while Iowa State's going to be replacing their quarterback, A.J. Epenesa, and their two stud tackles. And they also have to play Iowa State the week before Minnesota, so they have to be able to show some things. And that's where Iowa and Wisconsin this year. I thoroughly believe that their coaching staffs for the Hawkeyes and for the Badgers did a much better job of scheming against Minnesota than did Minnesota did scheming against them. Now, you could say Minnesota's offense did well against Iowa. They just weren't able to finish. I could go with that. But the way that Iowa's offense was able to come out in their opening game script and have three touchdown drives, and then you saw once they got out of that and Joe Rossi was able to adjust, then things went Minnesota's way. But that change has to come sooner. You can't allow Iowa to really do whatever they want that early in the game. And then you also saw Wisconsin, their offense do whatever they wanted against Minnesota's defense, and Minnesota's offense also had their struggles there. And so if you're going to become the Big Ten West champion, you have to really have those games early in the season next year. Iowa is September the 19th at home. Then the Gophers get the Badgers on October 10th. That early. Yes, the Badger-Wisconsin or the Badger-Gopher game is no longer the last game of the season for both teams. I think it takes a two-year hiatus, if I remember correctly. But Minnesota gets a chance early in the season to prove you can at least go 1-1 in those games. You're going to have a great opportunity down the stretch to really have a chance at the Big Ten West with games against Illinois, Michigan State, Purdue, Northwestern, Nebraska. None of those teams really scare me the way that Wisconsin and Iowa do. You really need to have better game plans going into those games against the two best teams in the Big Ten West if you're going to come out in 2020 and really assert yourself.
All right, let's change topics here just briefly and talk a little bit about the bowl game. I know that Ryan and I will have a preview out for the bowl game. I don't know when we're going to record that, and maybe we can talk about that after this, Ryan. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the experience of a bowl game and what it means to players, Derek. You had the fortune of playing collegiate football and participating in bowl games. So maybe give us the perspective of, you know, the old cliche is it's more practice for the younger guys, et cetera. You know, they get meaningful reps. You know, is that real? And what is it like to participate in a bowl game as a player?
Well, you know, I think I'm maybe one of a dying breed of fan that still really loves bowl games. I know that people are, they're really focused on a college football playoff, and I'm certainly not against that. I don't think you have to hate one and love another. But I think that comes from, as a player, I had fantastic experiences through these bowl games because it's, experience is the right word. It's an experience for fans, for the players and the coaching staff that's really unique. I know that college basketball has caught on and doing more and more of, you know, having tournaments in the Bahamas and Hawaii and, you know, going overseas and things like that, and more power to them because it adds a level of excitement and such. But I like the history of bowl games and the experience for players. So for us, it was the opportunity to, you know, get outside of the Midwest, being a Big Ten team, go on a trip. You go down a few days early, you have a few practices, you know, in a warmer climate. Kind of thaw yourself out when you get down south. And there's all kinds of things around that. There's pep rallies, there's banquets, there's fun activities. They take the team out every day to do a different type of activity. You get some free time in the evening, go out and have some fun. And so it's really a really fun, unique experience that I have really fond memories of the whole process. And so I think that, you know, we touched on a little bit earlier this season, but I really think that Minnesota Gopher fans have missed a lot of the really fun, some of the more fun aspects of college football, just because they haven't had some of the big time success that other schools have had. I know they've actually gotten to quite a few bowl games in the last dozen or so years, but, this is a little, you know, more prestigious. You've got a New Year's Day Bowl game, which is you know, rare, maybe one other opportunity in recent memory. And that, you know, provides a different level of exposure. It's a different level of talent in the team that you're facing. And all of those things are a fun challenge. So I would just, you know, sum it up by saying that I really love the bowl experience. And you know, the irony now is that, you know, people are focused on the college football playoff. And yeah, it's sometimes a lot of negativity, you know, towards the bowl setup. And it's interesting because the TV ratings and everything behind the bowl games continues to be great. There's a reason that they keep having all these bowl games, and they keep, you know, it's a successful enterprise for everybody involved. The schools get paid, the sponsors pay for that. The sponsors have no problem, you know, coming up with the bowl game and the funding, because everything works, the advertising revenue and everything around it. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy to me. On one hand, some people are, you know, kind of, you know, standoffish about it, or maybe just don't get the whole process. But on the other hand, by any measurement, the bowl games have been a huge success just for college football. And so I would just encourage people to, you know, take advantage of it. And if you can go down, that's obviously a great experience. But even if you can't, you know, have a bowl party at your house, or go out to, you know, a public viewing at, you know, one of the many states that's going to have a viewing party for Gopher fans for the Outback Bowl, and just take part in that. It's fun. It's not guaranteed, especially a bowl game at this level.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, you know, for someone, Luke, who spent Christmas in Detroit last year, and I spent my Christmas night with then Star Tribune beat reporter Randy Johnson at the Greektown Casino, and it was filled with smoke, despair, and just the saddest people you'll ever see at a Christmas casino, considering that was the only place open that we could go have a drink and tell some stories. To now flip that a year later, we'll be able to be in Tampa Bay, and we'll be able to be probably on a beach somewhere sipping rum runners with a 151 floater, and it's going to be warm, and I can be in a Hawaiian shirt with maximum two buttons. I know no one really cares, but from a fan or media perspective, and you're going from having to fly out to Detroit on the 26th of December to now you get to celebrate the new year in a warm destination, in humidity and warm air, and you get to take on an SEC opponent in Auburn that is pretty dang good, if you haven't noticed that already. We're talking about a team that played arguably the toughest schedule in the country. Oh, by the way, they have the SEC Defensive Player of the Year and a young man by the name of Derek Brown, who we're going to find out how good this Gopher offensive line really is, because Derek Brown is a grown man. We're talking about a gentleman who is 6'5", 295 pounds, a young man that had 12 and a half tackles for loss. And he was, oh, by the way, as I mentioned, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year in a conference that has a lot of good players in it. And we have another guy right next to him in Marlon Davidson, who is 6'3", 275. And he also had double digit tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks. This is a very, very good defensive line for Auburn. Now, the biggest thing, and maybe I'll even approach this question to Derek, Luke, is the biggest thing about bowl season, and everyone knows it, is we're going to find out within the first 10 minutes of the game who wants to be there and who doesn't. Because that's the biggest unknown, is what teams are just going to be happy to be there and what teams actually want to go out and win the game. Because you see upsets and you see blowouts all the time in bowl season because one team just doesn't want to be there. So as a player, Derek, I mean, you played in bowl games, and what is it like to go to the bowl game, and how do you try to get mentally there? Is it something between you and your teammates? Is it something that the coaches have to say? Is it an individual basis? I'd be very curious for your thoughts on that, because that's the biggest thing in bowl season, is who wants to be there, and no one will know until the game kicks off.
Yeah, I think that, well, speaking in practical terms, most of the implementation is done before the team leaves for the bowl. So you have, as Luke mentioned, you've had these extra 2 or 3 weeks of practice. You do get a lot more live reps with the young players, but your installation of new plays and schemes, and you've scouted the opponent, most of that goes in at practice back in Minneapolis. And then you fly out and you have what is essentially a short week's worth of practices. And so by then, you're hopefully mentally prepared. Again, you've got a lot of things going on in that bowl week, a lot of commitments and pep rallies and things that I mentioned. So it the mental part of it should be done by the time you get there. And, you know, I think that in terms of who wants to be there and who doesn't, I think a good way to look at it is what were the expectations of the teams and where did they land? And, you know, for this game specifically, you know, January 1st bowl game, 10-win season for the Gophers. I mean, I would imagine they have every reason to want to be there. Auburn, I don't know what their expectations were, but if they feel like the season was a letdown in some way, or they feel like they should be playing in a better bowl or a different position, that maybe is a team that isn't going to show up. I think we saw that last year. You know, the Gophers were coming off of a huge win over Wisconsin, were ecstatic to make a bowl game and play a good opponent in Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech didn't want to be there in the least. I think they felt like they should have been in a better bowl game or for whatever reason got snubbed. And I think that has a lot to do with it, where the expectations were and whether the team feels like they met expectations or exceeded. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, whether teams are able to show up on game day.
All right. One other topic just quickly about bowl games in general. You know, we're starting to see a trend, and I'm all for this, actually, seeing guys with NFL potential actually sitting out the bowl game and foregoing it. Obviously, Blake Cashman was one example for the Gophers last year. But, you know, a number of guys, I think this was started by Christian McCaffrey, was maybe the poster child of this a couple of years ago. You know, one, Ryan, do you have any inclination if this will impact the Gophers bowl game, not necessarily for the Gophers or Auburn, it could be both. And then just generally, what do you guys think of this concept in general?
So we asked PJ Fleck about the whole, do you know of anybody that's going to sit out the bowl game? We asked him that on Sunday when we got him. His answer was that to that was, haven't even thought about it yet. So if that gives you any inclination about how we're not going to know unless one of the players puts something on social media, for those of you as well looking for injury updates on Kamal Martin, Daniel Fa'alele, Cam Wiley, and Jacob Paulson, here was PJ Fleck's answer this past Sunday as well. January 1st is a long ways away, and they're hurt right now. So that is going to be the extent that we're going to learn about that. Now, when you look at it from the player side of things, I mean, who would you have potentially sitting out? Tyler Johnson, I could see that. But I also think that if you remember to last year's game, Luke, you know how I like to take a nice long stroll down Narrative Street.
I do.
And in the bowl game last year, the narrative was Tyler needs 110 yards and 2 touchdowns to break single season receiving records. PJ Fleck came out after the game and said, yeah, we knew that, and we got him the ball to break those records. Okay, well, as far as I'm concerned, he is, I believe, tied with Ron Johnson for the career receiving touchdown record. You don't think PJ wants to have Tyler number one? You think Tyler doesn't want to be number one all time? There are still things to play for record-wise, and I don't know that his stock would be necessarily impact one way or another if something were to happen injury-wise, but I'm sure it would be probably negatively. We have no idea, and that's the thing. I mean, I haven't heard anything that would say Tyler would sit out. Now, I don't know what kind of advice he's getting from the coaches, from his family, from potential agents, things of that nature. But when you look at Minnesota's draft prospects, if Kamal Martin is not 100% healthy and ready to go for this game, absolutely sit out. There is no point in playing if you're not 100%, get ready for the draft. If there's any of those guys that are not 100% ready to go, hold them out of the bowl game as much as it would be, as nice as that would be, Luke, to win the bowl game. You also have to think about your career afterwards, and you don't want the last taste in somebody's mouth to be bitter.
Totally. Derek, any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think I'm breaking any new ground here, but as a fan, you know, I don't like it. You know, it's disappointing because, of course, selfishly, you want to see your best team, you know, available for the bowl game. As a former player and thinking through a player's mind, I get it. You know, guys that are preparing, especially as Ryan said, if there's any sort of injury recovery, or most guys are banged up by the end of the season, but if it's anything more than bumps and bruises, I understand it. It's a business decision. And you know, at the end of the day, guys are trying to make a decision that's best for their livelihood going forward. I think in hindsight, if you go back and look, you know, I can't say through the Gophers off the top of my head, but I question whether a lot of these guys throughout college football that are choosing to sit out, that aren't the top level draft picks. I don't know that I totally understand that. I don't know what that gets them. You know, some of these guys are sitting out and then coming the next year, they aren't drafted. They maybe don't even make an active roster. And to me, I don't know how they benefited from that. Now, maybe that's hindsight because, you know, they didn't know how things were going to play out. But, and then the last thing I would say is, what concerns me is does this continue? Does this have any other effect? Are we going to see guys not wanting to finish a season, you know, because maybe their team isn't as competitive as they thought or something? Are guys going to sit out the last two games of the year? And that's a slippery slope. So I don't know. I don't have the solution, to be honest, but that's just something that as a fan, again, selfishly as a fan, you know, is in the back of my mind and, you know, potentially have concern for that.
All right. Okay, everybody buckle up. I'm going to take us through kind of a review of this season, and then hopefully we're going to get into just how it might impact recruiting just a little bit here. So let's think back to August. Ryan, if I remember correctly, the game, I think, was close to a sellout. It wasn't a sellout, but the very first game against South Dakota State, and I think that they ran a flash ticket sale, correct, for that first game?
Yeah, it was the... Yeah, it had to have been.
It was like they sold like some 10,000 tickets, or I don't remember exactly.
I think it was 7,024.
At like $10, right? Okay. And then additionally, they ran another marketing campaign where they basically were like, hey, buy three pizzas, you'll get a free ticket to another non-conference game, right? Now here we are, we're sitting in December, we're talking about a 10-win team. What did they have? Two sellouts. They had game day come. Not only do they have two sellouts, but like tickets were going well over face value, right?
You're
going
to make me find the Mike Wirz Becky tweet.
Oh, no.
He tweeted out everything in terms of...
I think you should find the Wirz Becky tweet because I think it would be good. But, I mean, they were a part of, like, the biggest 11 a.m. game, I believe. Whatever. Like, there was meaningful football happening, and this market was all over it, right? Meaningful college football, which was awesome, right? Game day had, the largest number of people view the game. I'm not sure. I know Nielsen probably measures that, but it was something like 2 million-ish people watched that. Like the ratings were absurd. They were able to sell tickets, etc. What I am curious about, Ryan, is how can we expect that to impact recruiting? Is that going to impact 2020? Is that impact 2021, 2022, etc.? Yeah. If you found the tweet, maybe you can also.
I did.
Okay.
So yeah, we can do recruiting, but I also want to note that so the average attendance in 2018 at TCF Bank Stadium in terms of what was scanned, I believe. Now, Eric Vigo, if you're listening and I have that wrong, please tweet it out. I'll retweet it so I get the correct information. But I believe this average attendance is what was scanned. In 2018, it was 37,915. That's 74.6% capacity. In 2019, it nearly jumped 10,000. To 46,190. That is nearly 91% capacity. That is going to absolutely help the bottom line. That puts Minnesota in the black a lot more. It's going to help them make upgrades. It's going to help them keep people like PJ Fleck around for a long time. Now, Luke, you asked the question that I think I get most right now, and that is when you look at Minnesota's 2020 recruiting class, and I believe as we sit here tonight via 24/7 Sports, they have the 26th rated recruiting class in the country, and they're sixth in the Big Ten. Now, I know there are some folks like, well, why isn't it better? Shouldn't 10 wins absolutely help that? Here's what I'll say is it's not going to help immediately. Now, it certainly helps to an extent. You certainly get in some doors like John Joyners, who is a name we've been talking about a ton on Gopher Illustrated, currently committed to Boston College, a four-star that just got bumped up to four-star today, a guy at defensive end that could be a really big impact player. Now, it helps that Jim Panagos was in on him for a long time, but Minnesota also has to sell, hey, we have 10 wins. Now, it's not going to impact 2020 a ton. There are a couple of reasons for that. Number one, Minnesota's recruiting class was essentially 90% of the way done before the season. That's the way PJ Fleck rolls. That's the way he wants to do it. But you're really going to see it in 2021. I think a good case study for that would be the University of Kentucky in football. You look at the season they had last year. Right? It might have been last year or the year before where they had an outlier season. I believe they won 9-10 games. And then you saw their next recruiting class be the highest it ever was, especially at the University of Kentucky. You're not talking about a football powerhouse, especially. I know that they're in the SEC, but for what they signed, yeah, you're going to be able to then get the attention of some young men. And that's where for the 2021 class, where you already have Ethan Calliope-Manis, Dino Calliope-Manis, and Sam Jackson, two of the three or four stars. That's where I think with a full year to recruit, a full year for PJ Fleck and his staff to sell, hey, we got 10 wins. Let's get you for a summer official visit so you can find out that Minnesota isn't a cold and barren wasteland like many say it is year-round. And then if they can sell Tyler Johnson's draft success, Kamal Martin's draft success, Carter Coughlin's draft success, you can sell Rashad Bateman saying, hey, this guy's probably going to be a day one, day two receiver. Do you want to be the next one in a long lineage here? And I think even if you want to look at the 2020 class specifically, a guy like Doug Emelian, that's a guy that essentially turned his nose at the staff in the spring and summer and was like, what do you think? Why would I come to Minnesota? Why would I do that? And then Minnesota wins 10 games. They have the number one and the number two leading receivers in the Big Ten. And then they're able to sell that to Doug and say, hey, want to turn your nose at us now? We still really like you. We're going to forget the past. Come on up here for a visit. And they're able to get him committed. You don't get Doug Emelian committed if, number one, you don't win 10 games. And number two, you don't have the number one and the number two receivers in the Big Ten. And that's where you can get a guy like that. So I think that's where you're going to see it come into effect in 2021. And that's my biggest thing I can stress to folks is, yeah, I know everybody wants to see the immediate results. Trust me, I do more than anybody. But as we currently sit here today via the 24/7 sports rankings, I have been working my tail off behind the scenes to make sure each and every one of Minnesota's commits and each and every one of Minnesota's targets have had their senior film reevaluated. And their senior live evaluations, get those into the database, into the rankings people. It turns out that when you press rankings people and make them do their job, it turns out Minnesota's commits, I think we're at like 10 bumps. That doesn't happen. If you've been following Gopher Recruiting for as long as I have, no one bumps Gopher Recruiting. And again, that's where I just think you're going to see it in 2021. But you can see it somewhat in the short term with some of the guys, and we'll see how this weekend goes. And I know that more people want me to talk recruiting, but it turns out this podcast doesn't pay my bills, and neither does Twitter. And that's why if you've seen me not been entirely active on Twitter, it's because all the information's on Gopher Illustrated behind the paywall. Now, as we record this 7 days until National Signing Day, there's a 7-day free trial. If you want to mooch and be on the 7-day free trial for, 7 days, do it. But that's where all the information is. I can guarantee there is no better spot on the internet to find Gopher football recruiting info than the GI League.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. I'd probably have to read it, though. Boy.
Yeah, it would involve you going to Gopher Illustrated at that point.
But I occasionally show up, and I do think you do a good job, but, it's my guy, Ryan James. That's why I'm there. So no offense to you.
And if folks do want recruiting podcast talk, Luke, it's like almost like we're recording a live recording with Gopher football staff members next Wednesday that we will be releasing on the second National Signing Day. So we are going to talk recruiting. I think we'll have a recruiting episode next week after signing day comes and goes. We'll probably bring Go Beyond to talk about recruiting and whatnot, but for now, that stuff stays behind the paywall to my lovely people of Gopher Illustrated.
All right, so I think I hit all the topics I wanted to hit in this episode. Derek, Ryan, you got any other last things you'd like to touch on real quick here?
I mean, if you do want to truly look ahead and you want to get optimistic and you want to look to the 2020 football schedule, I would and I think we talked about this to end the last episode, this schedule to me is not really any more daunting than what 2019 was for Minnesota. Florida Atlantic with a new head coach. You should win Florida Atlantic. You're going to beat Tennessee Tech. And you have to be able to beat Iowa at home. You have to be able to beat Iowa early in the year. And that's something I asked Derek about last podcast. We'll see if he remembers. Derek, do you remember what you told me about Iowa early in the year versus later in the year?
This time I remember. Iowa is a team that historically always gets better as the year goes on. They're a team that is just notorious for either dropping one of their early non-conference games or not being as competitive. But by November, they're usually, it's because they're well-coached, they're a fundamentally sound team, they're one of those game script teams, they're usually playing their best football at the end of the year.
So you get Iowa early in the year at home. It's a weird schedule in this for this, folks. Except all four September games are at home. Florida Atlantic, Tennessee Tech, Iowa, and BYU. That BYU team is going to be an interesting team to kind of play around with and dive into this offseason. And then October is an absolute grind. You have five Big Ten games, and four of them are on the road. Now, Maryland was an absolute disaster last year, but you have to go to their place. You have to go to Camp Randall. Your only home game in the month of October is against a Michigan team. Now, I would say that Penn State is better than Michigan, especially next year. And you saw Minnesota being able to take care of a team like Penn State at home. So that's another game that Minnesota is going to have to circle on their schedule. And then you get Illinois, which to me, that's a game Minnesota should win. And then your third Big Ten East team is going to be Michigan State. Now, the question for Mark D'Antonio's squad is, was this year an outlier or was this the new norm where their offense was absolutely dreadful? It was part of the reason why they were so putrid this year, especially for Michigan State standards. But you have to go to East Lansing. And then November brightens up a little bit where you get Purdue at home. Then you get a bye week. There's only one bye week next year, and that's November the 14th. And then you get Northwestern at home, and then you finish on the road on Black Friday in Lincoln, Nebraska. Now, to me, that schedule isn't really any more difficult than what Minnesota had. Now, you can certainly point to the fact that Minnesota's got five Big Ten road games, and only four of them of the nine games are going to be at home. I get that. But the crossover games aren't really, to me, that much more difficult. Now, Michigan State's going to be better than Rutgers. I get that. Certainly that's going to be an up in difficulty to an extent. But Maryland doesn't scare me. Michigan State really doesn't scare me. And then you get Michigan home. I'm not saying 10 wins. I said that throughout this entire podcast. But I don't think that anything less than, I think eight wins is probably where I'm going to end up in 9 months, but we'll see where I'm at. I just don't think that this 2020 schedule is that daunting unless you guys saw something that I did. Now, I believe that October is certainly going to be a grind. Derek, this is a schedule that I want Iowa early on, and I'm okay with having Wisconsin in the middle of the season next year.
Yeah, we talked about it. In addition to Iowa early, I've heard, some friends of mine lamenting the fact that, we got to play Wisconsin and Iowa early. That's not really, it's going to feel different because that's not traditional. I mean, the way I look at it is I think Minnesota can benefit from a shakeup. I mean, I could obviously eat my words next year, but let's face it, Minnesota has not had a lot of success playing Wisconsin at the end of the season. I mean, the numbers would bear that out over the last 15 years. So
I don't want to interrupt you, but it is worth noting next year, the two games that Wisconsin has before Minnesota, they're on the road at Michigan, and then they play Notre Dame at Lambeau. So you have two huge games
Lambeau?
They play Notre Dame at Lambeau the week before Minnesota next year.
Could you imagine the uprising if the Gophers played at U.S. Bank Stadium?
People would lose their minds. Let's get back to Derek.
Sorry.
Well, that's a good point, Ryan. I mean, I hadn't looked that closely at their, opponent schedule leading up to the game. But my point is just, in addition to having Iowa earlier, which I think is an advantage, having Wisconsin earlier, anything that shakes that up that is a difference from years past, I think is a positive for the Gophers. I mean, if you're Wisconsin, we want to play Minnesota at the end of the season because historically you've done very well. So I think those things are definitely potential benefits, and it'll be, as you said, the middle of the season is going to set the tone. And even if they're, you know, they stub their toe or have a letdown somewhere in there, you've got a favorable November to finish things out. And as we've talked about, you know, that crescendo into November is just hugely important, and the teams playing the best at the end of the year are usually the ones that end up in the, either a division race or going to the conference championship.
So this is what I'm really worried about is how much pub is Nebraska going to get going into this next season? Because I got to think that they're a lock for the college football playoff once again.
If you don't put Nebraska in your top 10 preseason, you deserve to have every part of your AP voting privileges taken away. You deserve it. I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Scott Frost is the next thing, like the best next thing since sliced bread. I can't talk anymore. We should really end this thing. But no, in all seriousness, I do want to be able to make fun of Nebraska again because that was a lot of fun. Okay. I don't think we have anything else, guys. I'm looking forward to the event a week from today. Today is a Wednesday that we're recording on. So on the 18th, make sure you make it over to TCF Bank Stadium, for the live podcast recording. It's going to be fun. We've done one other live event. And that was a boatload of fun in the signing day social. So it should be a good time as well. Also check out Ryan's work on GopherIllustrated.com. Derek, thanks for joining, man. It's been super fun to have you all season. I think that everyone is now smarter having listened to you talk about football. I don't think there's any question about that.
Appreciate it, guys. I appreciate having me on. It's been a blast. Yeah, my pleasure.
It's been fun. Ryan, any parting thoughts from you before next Wednesday?
I'm ready for recruiting season to be done with so I can sleep again, so I can have a phone battery again, so I can have life again, so I cannot wake up four times a night and really have anxiety attacks about did I miss a phone call from source XYZ. I'm ready for signing day to come and go. I'm ready for the bowl game to get here so I can get some sun for my Irish skin and hopefully be able to get out on the golf side and get a little fishing in, and we'll go from there.
All right, everybody, make sure that you dress up in a suit and tie like Mr. Burns for the live event. Apparently, that's the dress code. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.